You're listening to Classic Business with Michael Avery, brought to you by Altron, there when it matters.
When one thinks of the gold mining industry in South Africa, one thinks of an industry in structural decline. And talk for years has been of an industry that was facing its sunset years. I recall my late mentor David Gleeson once bemoaning the fact that gold mining managers were caught asleep at the wheel, as he put it. He was writing, I think it was a year before he died in the Business Day, that having rested on hard-won laurels as the experts in deep-level hard rock mining for too long, mine managers and CEOs had failed conspicuously to adapt to the new technologies that have been advanced with singular success elsewhere. Now, one company has certainly bucked this trend. Despite having its early history in deep-level mining, it is emerging as the powerhouse of surface mining, and that is certainly Mining Where the Sun Shines, which is quite interesting and far from having a sunset story to tell. With some recent deals under its belt, it certainly has a sustainable, hopefully profitable story for the next 50 years. Well, if you haven't guessed it by now, I'm talking about DRD Gold, and I've got CEO Neil Pretorius on the line to talk about one gold story that is more about new dawns than sunsets. Evening, Neil.
Hey, good evening, Michael.
I had the pleasure of visiting your Ergo treatment facility out in Brakpan a few months ago, and it certainly gives one a proper sense of the scale of the surface operations that you've accumulated. But I wasn't aware that DRD holds the honour of being the longest continually listed company on the JSE since 1894. It's an awful long time. Just take me back through the history of Durban-Roodepoort Deep, the Roodepoort Rocket, as traders affectionately knew it.
We were one of the first to start mining in South Africa, and it's increasingly starting to look as though we might be amongst the last to also mine in South Africa, and we've gone full circle. So we were part of the pioneering of deep-level underground mining in South Africa. The old Durban-Roodepoort Deep was indeed a very deep mine for the better part of 80 years, maybe a little bit longer, and then made the transition to on-surface mining, first with the acquisition of Crown, and then a number of other smaller plants, and then migrated into Ergo, acquired Ergo in collaboration then with Mintails, then bought Mintails out, and now, of course, recently we acquired some of the Tabanya Stillwater surface gold assets as well in the Far West Rand.
It is a wonderful story. It's got some great symmetry, Neil, if you look at it. The fact that you're one of the first deep-level miners in the country and, as you say, are likely to be around to mop up a lot of the surface tailings. How does that whole process work? I was quite amazed to see the scale of how you turn these surface tailings into slurry and then pipe them to that flagship Ergo plant in Brakpan. I had the pleasure of driving up to the top of that Brakpan tailings dam, I believe one of the biggest in the world and visible from space, and one can certainly believe it up there. How does that whole process work in practice?
The requirements for mining slurry or for mining tailings are basically fivefold. You need a large enough concentrated resource, and we're fortunate that there's been deep-level mining in Johannesburg for more than a century, so there is a very large concentrated resource. You also need a plant that is big enough capacity-wise, because it is an economies of scale business. It does require very significant volumes. You also require sufficient water. Water is an important aspect because all of your material, or most of your material, the slimes in any event, is moved from your reclamation site to the plant and then onto the deposition site by way of slurry pipelines. So it's high pressure water with which all of the slimes are washed into receptacles, into reservoir screens, etc., and then pumped to the plant. What's also equally important is access. So you require access routes from the various reclamation sites to your plant and from there also then to your deposition site. And I think that's what makes our footprint really unique, is the fact that we're in the middle of one of the largest cities in Africa. And we meander our way through where people live, where they work, etc., from the various mine dumps to the plant and so forth. And more often than not, they're not even used to not even aware of it. Mm-hmm. And then the final requirement, which is probably the single biggest qualifier, if one is to be singled out, is a big enough tailings deposition facility, because you cannot take the slurry back to where you mined it. It has to go onto another site. And in that, I think, also lies the sustainability aspect. One of the sustainability aspects of our model is the fact that when mining started in the Johannesburg area, I don't think anybody thought that they were going to be doing this for the next 100 odd years. And the deposition of tailings in particular was done where it was convenient, and then it just became bigger and bigger and bigger, and what was once farmland became a city, and people started living very close to and close proximity to these mine dumps. Many of them were also in environmentally sensitive areas, and what I particularly like about our model is the fact that, you know, we get to lift this up. I don't think it was deposited where it was because of environmental indifference. It was probably more of not knowing just how this was going to grow in scale. But I really like the idea of taking all of these tailings away and putting them onto a modern, well-managed, world-class facility where they are no longer posing either a nuisance, a health threat, and where the impact on the environment is also just so much more benign. And restoring developable land back into Johannesburg.
So it really is a win-win-win if you look at it. The way you then take a tailings dam like the Brakpan Tailings Dam and then incorporate the local vegetation back into that tailings dam is quite interesting as well, adding lime and other agricultural mixes in order to get the local vegetation to grow again, which in itself was fascinating. If we to look at your footprint, massive all the way from Daggafontein out in the east, out now to Driefontein 5 out in the west, around a 25-kilometer sort of strip east to west, it's absolutely massive. In terms of tonnage, how much tailings are we actually looking at out there?
Well, what we're recognizing in terms of reserves at this stage is just north of 500 million tons. We have access to much more. We do have the ability to access and link up significantly more tons of gold there and ore. And the intention is to develop the business and the infrastructure and so forth in such a way that we're not closing any doors behind us. We do want to make sure that we maintain access to most of the tailings in and around the Johannesburg area, and increasingly also perhaps extend our footprint, our exposure and accessibility in the far Westrand area. Once you pull out of an area, the fact is that it's going to be developed, and it's going to be far more difficult to once again get access, sufficient access, especially for your pipeline and your waterline routes, to get back into that area.
Neil, what would it require to process those dumps that are close to Soccer City, F&B Stadium, as it's known now? Because I believe it's close to some very useful and valuable infrastructure that is a leftover from the 2010 World Cup in terms of communications infrastructure. So that land potentially could be quite valuable.
Oh, yes, no, absolutely. We own 500 hectares there. I think I checked, but I think we're probably one of the largest property owners in the Johannesburg area as well, developable property. So those dumps certainly, you know, they've been used as tailings deposition dumps up until a few years ago, and they're now in the process of being cladded, vegetated, and so forth, so that they don't pose a health risk to the surrounding communities. We want to make sure that there's no dust coming off those dams. There's hardly any dust coming off them as we speak, but we want to take it further, and by 2023, our target date is for there not to be any dust coming off those dumps and for it to be completely vegetated. But yes, ultimately, in the long term, and if I say long term, I'm talking 25, 30 years into the future, they can be mined if it's done based purely on commercial grounds or for commercial considerations. At this stage, what we're doing is entirely commercial. So we obviously do follow the broader ideology of sustainable development. We want to have a very light environmental footprint, both in terms of restoration, management, and containment. But ultimately, the business runs with money that we make. We haven't raised any capital for many, many years. We've borrowed a bit of money from time to time to fund capital infrastructure development. But this cleanup is a consequence of a commercial endeavor that's been in profit for enough years to be a very consistent, if not longest paying dividend payer in the gold market in South Africa. We've been paying uninterrupted dividends now for 11 years. So if it's only going to be commerciality, if it's only going to be profit, and if it's going to be self-sustainable the way that the business is now, you're probably talking 20, 25 years, maybe a little bit later,
yeah,
before those dumps are mined, because there are a whole host of others that are higher in grade that you need to do in mind. But yes, you know, the land there just value that. If you've done things similar to, I don't know, a downtown Johannesburg or a Sandton, you have another business hub. And there's hundreds of thousands of people who commute into the Sandton area every day and into the Johannesburg area every day. They might be living on the doorstep of where they work. So Wetu would not be on the other side of the tailings anymore. Wetu would be right next to the commercial hub of Johannesburg, or one of the commercial hubs of Johannesburg, if were to come to fruition.
And that's what makes it long-term. And as you say, 25 to 30 years is a long time, but long-term, so exciting. More immediate is what you're doing out in the Far West Gold Recoveries operation. And in your update for the quarter to the end of March this year that you released today, you've shown how much of a transformational deal this has been. You reported a 15% quarter-on-quarter rise in gold production to just under 1,300 kilograms, primarily due to an 11% increase in tonnage throughput at the first phase of that Far West Gold Recoveries operation. So you must be pleased with how that is ramping up for you.
I'm very pleased that we actually managed to finally get to the point where we could expand the business. So the reimagination of DRD Gold from a deep-level underground mine to a surface operator did not go without any hiccups. It's a process that probably took the better part of 10 years. And the infrastructure, which constitutes the core of the business, is really infrastructure that was established and combined in terms of a deal that I think at the time was 80 million rand in value and then subsequently capitalized. So that is what is the new DRD. That is what comprises the new DRD. And I think the satisfactory part for those on the board and the management of DRD is the fact that foundation enabled us to now also start expanding. And it is with the value of equity that the market ascribed to that asset that we were able to move forward on the transaction and to acquire these assets. And the asset is turning out to be everything that we had hoped it would be. The assumptions upon which we based the initial valuation of the asset, those assumptions are all turning out to be accurate. And then more often than not, because it's an ultra high volume game where you really where the commerciality depends not just on very high volume, but also on almost nano extraction efficiency, as you'd witnessed when you went to the plant. Sometimes the range could be fairly wide. So we were very pleased when we started up in December and in the first few months of production to see that our metallurgical assumptions were correct, our assumptions in terms of the ore body, that those assumptions were correct. And this circuit is trending beautifully. And it's contributing as we speak towards the net cash flow of the business. So we're very fortunate to be able to secure this transaction. And we're hoping that we can maintain this momentum because I suppose one of the things that this relationship that we have with Sibanye is opening up for us, having been very defensive in terms of repositioning the business and setting up the business for an entirely different model. Now we might actually get onto the front foot with Far West Operations first phase being the first step, and then maybe several other steps to see if we can expand our footprint and start playing a little bit more aggressively. I think we have more confidence in our model. We have more confidence in the management systems that we've developed over time, particularly the electronic and automated monitoring systems. This is the sort of business with a scale of material coming through the plant, but also the sensitivity of the extraction process, the metallurgical sensitivity. It is not a plant that you can manage after the fact. You have to stay ahead of the plant. You need to run it towards a recipe, very specific recipe, and you need systems in place in order to make sure that you can stay within range, that you do not start trending to outside of very specific prefixed variables and the prefixed ranges. And the system that we developed at Ergo in particular, where we have over 44,000 data collection points, that is a system that which we believe is portable. We can take it onto other footprints, and the logistical capacity, I think, is also becoming increasingly established and credible. So hopefully this could be the first step of many similar steps. So it's a company that I think is known for cash flow. It was known for lack of growth and lack of expansion potential. Hopefully we can put that to rest. Hopefully we can establish some track record also as project developers and successful project developers. And maybe there could be a bit of a growth angle creeping into our story as well that could bring a bit of more excitement into the market's perception of the business.
What does that mean from a dividend-paying perspective? You've, as you said, always been a very reliable dividend payer over the last 10 years. And it's one of those questions that does divide people. Often paying dividends sometimes might seem a management team, as you say, are less a growth story, and that they're just a good old cash cow and cash generator, and they're returning cash to shareholders. Are you saying that perhaps you might be retaining some of those earnings to invest in ramping up what's going on in the West Rand?
Well, I think the three key features of our story in the past was the fact that we embrace sustainable development, and that the commercial endeavor was to a large extent also underscored by our pursuit of a better life for people in and around the Johannesburg area and a very life and environmental footprint and restoring the scar tissue of mining. So that was the one feature. The second feature was that we were very focused on cash flows, hence the dividend payment. And the third feature was that we took full exposure to gold price. So we didn't hedge. With the exception of a very small period of time late last year when we had taken on some debt, and we wanted to make sure that we could stay within some of the debt cover ratios. But those are the key features of our business, I think, from an investor perspective. I think we can add a fourth feature to that now. So I don't think it's been substituted or overshadowed by anything new, but I do think that perhaps growth can now be an additional feature which we can take to the investor community and say, you know, you've not been particularly supportive of the stock and there are a number of very good reasons for that, but maybe this can convince you to be a little bit more bullish and provide a little bit more support. Because the more you support us, the more we can take this model and expand it. And we will remain true to our core values of not being cash flow per share dilutive. That's always going to be a very important feature of any new project that you consider. But we need our shareholders to support us and give value to our currency, to our stock, to enable us to maybe a little bit more aggressive. Because there are so many assets out there in the larger companies, the international companies, that receive absolutely no value recognition at this stage. It disappears in the size of those companies. And those could be brought into our portfolio, and it could be very significant value unlock without compromising any of the other values that I think that have sustained the DRD Gold up until now, and that the bedrock really of our development story and of our value system.
It's a great story, Neil, and one that I know Neil Froneman as well was really complimentary of at the recent Joburg Indaba breakfast, saying that the business model and the management team could be global leaders. In terms of potential offshore expansion in your future, are there any particular regions that you're looking at with tailings opportunities? I know there are opportunities in the PGM space.
Well, I think now having this association with Sibanye, having taken a big investment in the company, Sibanye and Ian in particular has done so many deals. Our team, our experience is limited in this regard, and I think we can learn from them and we could leverage their expertise in the field, and we certainly intend to do that to the extent that they allow us to. And I'm hoping that our performance is such that they would want us to do that and that they will continue to give us the support that they do. Insofar as the transaction itself is concerned, I think that Neil Froneman has set an example maybe for other executives, for other teams, in that he was very pragmatic in how he approached this transaction and made it affordable for us. He sat on an asset which was a brilliant asset in our opinion, but which simply just was invisible within the context and size of his business. It didn't receive any value recognition. And by moving it into a company that is known for tailings retreatment and that is steadily building up a reputation for reliability, he got premium up front and value unlock, real value unlock. And I think that I'm hoping other executives have followed this story and that they will follow suit. It's unnecessary to just sit on assets for the sake of having them in your portfolio. Let them go. Set them free. We'll take care of them and we'll be responsible custodians of those assets. And hopefully we could bring our recipe to those assets and it could bring about further value unlock. So our focus initially, sorry, it's a long way of answering your question. The focus initially, very much South Africa. South Africa has enormous potential from our perspective. The fact that the larger companies are either losing interest in the assets here, or that they are less robust or bullish about the assets here, and to an extent, I suppose, also not that keen on the country, means that the likelihood that the tailings would have accumulated over 100 odd years is going to be developed by or would be developed by those companies, that likelihood is getting increasingly remote, which means that they become affordable and we can access them, and we are keen to do that. Because what we've seen, even during this very dark period that Eskom has gone through, with the Mozambique power line having been disrupted and some of the additional normal challenges that they face, that we could still double EBITDA over that same period because it's just the right focus in the right place. And what I probably need to point out is that the EBITDA numbers that you saw in our release this morning does not take into consideration any of the production and cash flows from the Far West operations. Those are still capitalized because the project as yet is not deemed to be fully commissioned. It would be we probably will hit design volume throughput during the course of the next month or so. So Ergo, the Ergo on its own had produced these numbers at a time when the situation or conditions in South Africa were very challenging for producers. So that being the case, it means that we have a model which is probably more resilient than most others to the South Africa specific challenges and conditions. And hence, having established that and increasingly I think showing that, we would want to expand initially our South African footprint and try and see if we can get more and more tailings consolidated under our banner, under our brand, and start developing those. If something does come up overseas, we're not obsessing about overseas. We don't think that we at this stage necessarily want a diversified portfolio in that regard because we are a small team, and what I do find is that remote controlled assets are assets that get away from you. We had that in the past, Papua New Guinea and Fiji, and those are tough. They were difficult to manage, and we only owned them for a very short period of time, and that was not always a reflection of the quality of the asset. It was probably a reflection of the quality of how tightly they were being managed here out of Johannesburg. So we would want to build capacity locally. We want to increase our footprint locally, see if we can duplicate the story that is brought us up before here and take it further. And then once we have people and better capacity and once we've got more of these circuits requiring less management time, then I think maybe we can become a little bit more ambitious and start venturing outside of South Africa. But there's still a lot of tailings in South Africa, which I think belong in the RD world. That are just lying there and not being recognized by the market.
I can think of the Anglo tailings as one example out in the West and more very interesting. And when you look at your model, mining where the sun shines is naturally lower risk relative to deep level underground mining for a number of reasons. So yet another supportive factor in all of this. Just Neil, as we wrap up, the country's heading to the polls tomorrow, a crucial election. What are your expectations for the country after the elections? I quite frankly am suffering a bit of election fatigue. And what do you expect under the leadership of President Ramaphosa to really start extracting value from South Africa where we've struggled to find any over the last decade?
Very little doubt in my mind that our president knows exactly what needs to be done. Whether his party will allow him to do it, that remains to be seen. So we'll see what sort of mandate he gets tomorrow. Remember, he's the president, he's not a CEO, so he needs to lead by way of, I suppose, negotiation. And sometimes even relying on what he is not capable of doing, not capable of interfering with prosecuting authorities, etc., etc. But I do think that if he does get the support that he needs, that he knows exactly what needs to get done, and he will do it. So I think that we've turned the corner in South Africa insofar as the integrity and governance of political leadership is concerned. And, hopefully the noise can die down. I think politicians have really just once again shown that we really just should lock them in a dark room because they're divisive. South African politicians typically are divisive, and then, you know, the days of Nelson Mandela are also such a distant memory of unity and rainbow nation and putting together and so forth. So let's hope that we'll see some Tumamina going forward, and that our president will get a good enough support that he can do what he wants, but also sensible and intelligent and credible opposition, so that he's also kept on the straight and narrow. So I have a lot of confidence going forward, Michael. There's a lot of ifs and buts and so forth, but I do think that we've turned the corner and we're on the right track.
It is the nature of politics, isn't it? As Mark Twain loved to say, they're like diapers of politicians. They need to be changed frequently and for the same reason. Neil, always a great pleasure chatting to you and sharing one of the few, if not the only, bright shining light in what is generally a sunset in terms of South Africa's deep level gold mining industry. Above ground, though, things are certainly looking much better under the DRD Gold banner. Take care.